There are few topics in life that are more difficult for us to discuss than the topic of death. In fact, it's so difficult for us to talk about that it's difficult for us to even say the word. We've come up with a whole litany of words to use instead of using the word death or dying. Anytime you have a word to substitute for another word, it's called euphemism. So we have many euphemisms that we use in place of the word death. Some of our favorite euphemisms for death include past, passed on, passed away, gone to their eternal rest, fallen asleep, demise, deceased, departed, gone, slipped away, lost their battle, succumbed, or gave up the ghost. Now, for some reason, it's easier for us to use those words than it is for us to use the word death, or dying, or die. This morning, we're going to address the subject head on and entitle our message, Death, What's That? What exactly is death? When that subject comes up in conversations that we might have with family or friends or people at work, you know, we really need to have some kind of a straightforward, clear explanation of what that word means. If, as with other subjects we've discussed in the last 6 weeks, we're trying to make these conversations basic and simple, and we're going to try to do that this morning because the biblical understanding of death should not be hard to explain. Although there's always been a shroud of mystery around death, there's one thing about death that's never changed. It's unavoidable. It's unavoidable. The satirical website, The Onion, posted this tongue-in-cheek article. Let me read it. Officials from the World Health Organization expressed disappointment Monday at the group's findings that, despite the enormous efforts of doctors, rescue workers, and other medical professionals worldwide, the global death rate remains constant at 100%. Death, a metabolic affliction causing total shutdown of all bodily functions, has long been considered humanity's number one health concern. Responsible for 100% of all recorded fatalities worldwide, a condition has no known cure. I was really hoping that with all those radiology treatments, rescue helicopters, aerobics TV shows, and what have you, that we might at least make a dent in it this year, World Health Organization Director Dr. Gernot Blatt said. Unfortunately, he continues, it would appear that the death rate remains constant and total as it has consistently since the dawn of time. Well, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek article, but it's pretty much spot on. Pretty much spot on. The statistics have not changed. They've remained the same. Death is unavoidable and pretty lethal at 100%. Mark Twain wrote this, "Death, the only immortal who treats us all alike, whose pity and whose peace and whose refuge are for all, the soiled and the pure, the rich and the poor, the loved and the unloved, all die." So, when we consider death, the first thing we think about is our bodies stop, right? First thing we think about is our bodies shut down. That article from Onion said death is the metabolic affliction causing total shutdown of all bodily functions. It also says there is no known cure. And that's true. But that has never stopped scientists from trying to come up with a way to either stop the death process or postpone the death process. According to an article in the New York Times from last March, March 2018, many scientists are trying to avoid death by conducting experiments on themselves. I guess they can't find anybody else to volunteer. A nutritionist named Clive McKay designed a low-calorie diet for his lab rats. He claimed that his rats lived to an equivalent of 130 human years. McKay applied his theory to himself, nibbling on morsels of food from his own garden in the same proportion as he had given to his rats. Though trim and athletic, he had two strokes and died at age 69. Failed experiment. Another researcher, Roy Walford, stuck to a 1,600-calorie-a-day diet. He wrote two books, The 120-Year Diet and Beyond the 120-Year Diet. He became a cult figure with thousands of followers, but he died at age 79. Bummer. The wild foods enthusiast, Jule Gibbons, was far ahead of his time in his advocacy of diverse plant diets. He died at age 64, didn't do him much good. The nutritionist, Adele Davis, helped wake millions of us up to the dangers of refined foods like white bread, but she died at age 70. Nathan Pritikin, one of the foremost champions of low-fat diets, died at age 69. Dr. Robert Atkins, kind of the reverse philosophy. He believed in eating meat and meat only rather than vegetables. His diet paid off. He made it 4 years longer and died at age 73. And then finally, Jerome Rodel, world-renowned founder of publishing empire dedicated to good health, hailed as, and I quote, the guru of the organic food cult, responsible for all these health food stores, Whole Food stores. He was going to be interviewed by a talk show host, went in, they were putting the microphones on his lapel, they were getting the lighting all corrected, he coughed twice, fell to the floor, and died at age 72. Obviously, that episode never aired. No matter what we do, our bodies are going to stop. Can't avoid it. Do you know why? Two things. Sin kills our bodies, and everybody has sinned. God explains, Romans 5, verse 12. Just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, in this way death spread to all men, because all sinned. Adam was intended to live forever. He was never intended to die. But after the introduction of sin into the world by Adam, he introduced sin into the world. It's like introducing a black plague into the world. If he hadn't done it, we would have. Adam only lived 930 years. Now, we don't have time to look at every generation, but I want to look at every other generation so you can kind of get an idea of the effect of sin, increasing sin in our world, and the effect that it had upon ages of man. Adam's grandson, Enosh, lived 905 years. Enosh's grandson, Mahalalel, lived 895 years. Mahalalel's grandson, Enoch, didn't die. God took him straight to heaven, so we can't look at him. Enoch's grandson, Lamech, lived 777 years. Lamech's grandson, Shem, lived 600 years. Shem's grandson, Shelah, lived 433 years. You see what's happening here? Shelah's grandson, Peleg, lived 239 years. Peleg's grandson, Serug, lived 230 years. Serug's grandson, Terah, lived 205 years. Terah's grandson, we can't leave out Abraham. Terah's son, Abraham, lived 175 years. Abraham's grandson, Jacob, lived 147 years. Then we skip down to Moses. He lived 120 years. Then we skip down to David. He lived 70 years. And that's where we are today. Sin, having that diminishing effect upon the lives of men. So the effect of the disease of sin being introduced into God's perfect world is that all of our bodies now stop. And they stop much younger now than they did in the beginning. That's just the effect that the black disease of sin has on the bodies of mankind. That's the first characteristic of death. Here's another characteristic of death. Our souls continue. Now, there's a lot of misunderstanding about this. Let's look at a parable told by Jesus himself as he clarifies some of our confusion. Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 24. Jesus says, "There was a rich man who would dress in purple and fine linen, feasting lavishly every day, but a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, was left at his gate. He longed to be filled with what fell from the rich man's table, but instead the dogs would come and lick his sores. One day, the poor man died and was carried away by the angels to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried, and being in torment in Hades, he looked up and saw Abraham a long way off with Lazarus at his side. 'Father Abraham,' he called out, 'have mercy on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue because I am in agony in this flame.'" Now, a couple of things we want to notice as we look at that parable. First of all, everyone's bodies stop. Wealthy people, their body stops. Unwealthy people, their bodies stop. Healthy people, unhealthy people, young people, old people. Doesn't matter whether a person is saved or unsaved. Doesn't matter whether they have a good relationship with the Lord or not have a good relationship with the Lord. Everybody's body stops. But the other thing we have to take notice of today is that everybody's souls continue. We often make the mistake of thinking that only those who are in a good standing with the Lord can expect to receive life after death. That's wrong. The lives of those who follow Christ, they have life after death. But those who have not followed Christ, they also have life after death. Their lives also continue, according to the Lord's parable. Interesting, interesting. Let me share this with you. In the corner of my closet at the house, there's about 6 inches of clothes that stand out more than anything else in my closet. These are my green and beige Marine Corps uniforms. I never wear them because they've shrunk. A few weeks ago, I had occasion to visit the VA clinic in Austin, which, by the way, is a very good facility. And so while I'm there, I'm sitting waiting to be seen, and I'm sitting next to another Marine, and we began to visit. Some difference between us. When I was in the Marines, I was a corporal. That's a very low enlisted rank. That's just 3 ranks above private. That's very lowly. On the other hand, he was a bird colonel, which is very high rank. That's just below general. He had power of life and death over me back in the day. So here we are, 2 Marines, a lowly corporal and a very exalted bird colonel. We both came from the Marine Corps. We both experienced the discharge. We both survived the discharge, and here we both were. But one of the things you would have immediately noticed by looking at the two of us together is because of God's hand on me, because I've walked with the Lord all these days, the Lord has treated me very well. He, on the other hand, did not belong to the Lord. He had not walked with the Lord through all these days, and he was in pretty bad shape. He was discouraged. He was defeated. A lot of things going on in his life. Both of us began the same place. Both of us experienced the discharge, he from a high position, me from a low position. But here we are, we've kind of switched because of the activity of the Lord in my life and the lack of activity of the Lord in his life. Everyone's going to survive death. We're all coming from the same situation here. Some of us very lowly situations, some very high situations. We're all going to go through the discharge. We're all going to go through the death. We're all going to survive over onto the other side. The difference is going to be those who walk with the Lord, those who've given their lives to the Lord, are going to be well cared for by the Lord. Those who don't walk with the Lord, those who don't have a life with the Lord, are not going to be blessed by the Lord on the other side, but we're all going to survive the discharge. We're all going to survive the stopping of our bodies. I want to tell you the most exciting thing about death, and this is the truth, and you can bet your life on it, which, in fact, we're going to. At the moment of death, our eternity starts. Big question is where? A lot of confusion about this too. The Academy Award-winning actor Richard Dreyfuss is an agnostic futilitarian. That means he acknowledges there may be a God and an afterlife, but you can't know anything about it and you can't put any hope in it. He said this, "Isn't it funny that God takes you and puts you through an unendurable life, and then at the moment you've just begun to understand it and have some wisdom, it ends. I have this inner life which is vast and as large as the universe. I really like me. I hope I have another life. I hope I get another shot at it." You know, that sounds like thinly veiled reincarnationism. I come from a little bit of a different place than Richard Dreyfuss. I can't think of anything more miserable than reincarnation. I do not want to live another life here. You know, at the end of that life, what happens? You're going to live another life here, and then another life here, and then another life here? Some of you have seen the movie Groundhog Day. This is kind of like an everlasting, eternal, never-ending Groundhog Day, living one life after another, after another, after another. Here, you've got to be kidding me. That's miserable. I went off this train. Unlike him. Listen, that's not going to happen for anyone. What is going to happen is we're going to live out all eternity somewhere other than here. Jesus speaks of the two destinations in Matthew 13, 41 through 43. Listen to this. "The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will gather from his kingdom everything that causes sin and those guilty of lawlessness. They will throw them into a blazing furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in their Father's kingdom." Although he kind of reverses the order, he still continues to speak to it in Matthew 25, 46. "And they will go away into eternal punishment," talking about the lawless, "but the righteous into eternal life." So there is where our eternity starts. Those who do not trust and follow Jesus to eternal punishment, and those who do trust and follow Jesus to eternal life. Eternity is going to start for everybody, but in different places. My cousin Bob was the closest thing to a big brother I had. He was 2 years older than me, and I just thought he hung the moon. I mean, we hunted together, we fished together, we camped out together, we hauled hay together. He was the first hay hauling crew I worked on. He's always kind of trying to take care of his younger cousin. When I was a sophomore in high school, I was linebacker on the football team, new linebacker. He was the offensive right guard on the football team. So at practice, we were up against each other. And wanting to take care of his young cousin, as he came up to the line, I was not far from him, with his eyes, he would tell me the direction the play was going to go, you know. Until I began to shine, and then he would lie to me. So that after that, it was just up to me. It was up to me to read the play correctly. From that point forward, if I did anything right, if I did anything good, he'd compliment me. If I did anything bad, he'd say nothing. So I really wanted Bob's compliments. If I did something right after the play, he'd swap me on the rear and say, "Way to read the play, cuz, for real." He'd go back and get in the huddle. "Good hit, cuz, for real. Way to stop him, cuz, for real." So that phrase, "for real," kind of represented, I did the right thing then, man. I did the right thing. Well, years have gone by. I got a call from his daughter a few years ago, Belinda, and she said, "Dad's dying, Steve. Can you come see him?" Sure. So I drove up there. You see, Bob began drinking heavy in high school. He always drank heavily, never stopped. Couldn't get him to stop, drank. So he was dying of liver cirrhosis. He had liver cirrhosis, and it was claiming his life, and other organs had been affected. So I went down, sat down with him in his living room, that little house he was living in, and we laughed about old times. And I said, "Bob, you know you're going to die." He said, "Looks like it." And I said, "Well, you've torn up your body. What do you expect? Your body's going to stop on you." "Yeah, I know." I said, "Bob, look, I've got good news for you. Your body's going to stop, but your soul's going to survive. Your soul's going to live on after your body stops. Only question is where. Where's it going to survive through eternity?" And I opened my Bible that I had with me, and I kind of shared with him. The revolves kind of reversed. And I shared with him what it meant to give his life to Christ Jesus and to follow the Lord and the Lord's promise to claim him when his body stopped. And I said, "You ever done that, Bob?" He said, "No." "You want to?" "Yeah, I'd really like to." So we prayed together, and there in his front room, I listened as Bob confessed his sinfulness to Jesus and begged for forgiveness and turned control of his life over to the Lord and pledged to follow him for whatever life he had left. Before we prayed, Bob's face was dragged down with despair and discouragement and anxiety. When we lifted, we stood up, and his face was covered with peace and serenity. And we talked a little while longer, and I said, "Bob, I've got to go." I stood and shook his hand. He couldn't get up. And I said, "Bob, I'll see you on the other side, for real." And he winked and said, "For real." 3 weeks later, his body stopped. But his soul survived. And he began eternity in the presence of Jesus himself. I've got to ask you today. Your body's going to stop, friend. Some of you will last longer than others, but your body's going to stop. There's not a thing you can do to prevent it. Good news is your soul's going to survive. Only question is, where? In the presence of Jesus or not in Jesus' presence? Don't wait until you got 3 weeks left. That's taking a big risk. Death's coming. What are you going to do about it? For real. Bow your head with me.